welcome to this week's Yes to Life show. My name's Robin Daly. I'm the chairman and the founder of the charity Yes to Life. The Yes to Life show is all about the stormy world of cancer, which often seems to have more in common with politics or religion than with healthcare. My aim is to find out what's really working for people, what isn't working, and why. Always aiming to look from the viewpoint of those with cancer wanting a full recovery than from any shade of medical position. In this week's show, I'm talking over Skype to the makers of the successful viral documentary The Promise, Phil and Rosa Hughes. The film is a hard-hitting look at the risks versus the benefits of the largest breast screening initiative ever implemented. Through talking to a wide range of experts, it exposes some extremely uncomfortable truths about a seemingly benign, caring, intelligent scheme to help women in the UK to avoid breast cancer. As such, it's a strong call for a grassroots questioning of the established advice, and it highlights an urgent need for some alternative solutions. I'm talking to Rosa and Phil today to find out about the impact of their film and of the progress in this field generally. So welcome to the show, Rosa and Phil, and thanks very much indeed for coming on to speak to us today about mammograms, about the breast screening program. One of the most memorable messages from The Promise that stuck with me is that A, even the experts either don't know how much radiation is involved in a mammogram, or if they do, they're not saying, preferring to use platitudes and making comparisons with general background radiation or aeroplane flights that makes them sound ridiculously harmless. And B, that the one person in the film who did know the facts gave an astonishing figure that, if my memory is correct, it almost equates an annual mammogram with weekly chest x-rays, something I reckon very few women would be up for if they knew. So a government-backed screening program of this sort is a juggernaut of immense proportions, and stopping it is a massive challenge. And doubts have been expressed about its effectiveness for many years already, during which time millions more mammograms have been carried out. From where you stand, do you think the message is getting out there at all?
I don't think that the message has ever been out there. I think that all of the information from the very, very start, the conception of routine mammography, was just to entice women to attend for mammography. They've never really been told or given the message about the risks as well as benefits of mammography. So I think there's still a big confusion. In fact, the Marmot report was actually put out because they, under pressure, were told that women weren't being told the truth. So Marmot report comes in, which I'd like to speak about later if we could,
okay,
and then gives a lot of figures that the screening lobby grab hold of and go with as if that is gospel. And again, after the Marmot report, when they invited the public again stated that they were surprised of the information that they weren't told. So I think, again, repeating myself, that women have never been told the truth about mammography.
And just on that aspect of radiation, Robin, even now, they don't clarify how much radiation a woman is exposed to. And you're right, in the film, Professor Ken Young equates it to 40 chest x-rays when you go for a mammogram. And of course, this Phil, I mean, Phil's far more into the levels of radiation than I am, but it ionizes every woman. So every woman is damaged. And this has never been told to women. And it's like small print still, you know, that there's a small amount of radiation. 40 chest x-rays is not a small amount of radiation. And I know in the 80s, they stopped one chest x-ray on men, didn't they, when they were looking for TB, because it was giving more men lung cancer.
Blimey. So I didn't know that.
So 40 chest x-rays is too much. As you said, it's like nearly going and having a chest x-ray every week. And no woman would do that.
No.
So So yes, the levels of radiation. What they go on more about is this misdiagnosis of women being overdiagnosed with something they don't have. But the radiation, I think, is as, if not more important.
Mm. Oh, well, damage.
Every woman is damaged from the procedure.
It just seems ridiculous to set up a screening program to look for breast cancer with a procedure that only increases your risk of getting breast cancer every time you use it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do this for years and years and not expect to create new cases of breast cancer or lung cancer.
Of course, that's another issue is the younger women, Robin, because that's why they don't do many mammograms on younger women, because of the exposure to ionizing radiation. They can't be seen to be radiating younger women's breasts.
And there's no justification for that, because mammography is limited by dense breast tissue. So
right. Okay, well, look, I want to go into several of the things you said there in more detail as we go on. But maybe at this point, you'd just like to tell our listeners briefly what set you on this path and what spurred you to go to enormous lengths to try to bring about change in this field.
I think the big thing for me, obviously, was when Rosa was diagnosed with breast cancer. And that was a shock that you don't really ever get over. I think obviously Rose is going to be better at explaining this, but my first involvement with wanting to make a difference came with wanting to make that difference for Rosa, and looking at, I mean, as you know, I've been a homeopath for years, and the way I was taught about cancer was different than the way the orthodox medicine looks at cancer. I was always taught about making the environment of the body healthy so cancer couldn't exist, not poisoning the body. So when it came round and it slaps you in the face that it's your wife we're now talking about, you've got to put your money where your mouth is.
Absolutely.
Mm. Yeah, so I mean that is the only reason I think that we got into this, because it certainly wasn't something that we were looking to do to change things. But I think because of my own experience, I was very lucky to be married to Phil. Phil knew the dangers of angiogenesis, of sticking needles in tumours. He knew that having a mammogram and squashing the breast down, and I had a big tumour in my left breast, so he, you know, and squashing it and traumatising it probably wasn't a good idea initially. So that's when he did research and found thermography. And there was very few places in the UK doing it in 2006, which is when I had my problem. We found a place in Harley Street and we went down there. And when we had the thermogram, of course, with a thermogram, nothing touches you and it picks up activity in the breast. And my first report came back for high risk for malignancy. And at that point, we didn't know. We didn't know the status of the tumour, you know, well, or anything, really.
We were told it was high risk for malignancy, so that basically, from my point of view, ruled that. Well, it was never, I keep on saying my point of view, it was never really my point of view. The whole process was, what does Rosa want? The only time I would interfere in anything is obviously because of the fear factor at the initial diagnosis for Rosa was that she would say sometimes, I just want this cut out of me. And then we would discuss, you know, what were the benefits of that, if there were any. But when Rosa's med report came back and said that this was the highest risk factor you could have for malignancy, then I had to seriously consider with Rosa whether the next stage was going to be a biopsy.
Right.
And it just seemed to me to be ridiculous to disturb a tumour that was at a 96% risk of malignancy.
I think, Robin, as well, initially you're very frightened about everything, as you know, because you're dealing with these sorts of people all the time, people that are poorly with, you know, the great work that Yes to Life do. We're ignorant of what cancer is. And there's so much misconception out there. So initially I did want the tumour cut out. I was terrified. And I'm so glad now that I didn't have it done. But it was never initially that I wasn't going to do conventional treatments. It was like, they said, come back in 3 months. So Phil said, look, we've got an opportunity here to make some changes. So we embarked on an alternative, you know, like cancer, a natural healing process. Mm. And when I went back after 3 months, the angiogenesis around the tumour had started to improve. Mm. Which was it was just like, I was just like a mad woman when I got those, you know, I was whooping around the house, and I thought, oh my God,
right.
you know, it's going in the right direction. So yeah. It wasn't initially that I was just terrified initially, as we all are. Mm. But as time went on and I got better, and I was using thermography as I went along to monitor, and I was on my program, and just, I never had to, I had to go and get the tumour removed. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
So I'm here now in 2015, still with my tumour. It's not anywhere near as big as it was, but I have low risk breast now, and I just monitor that every year.
Yeah.
It is. You just change the environment of the body. And breast cancer, as you know, is linked into a lot of emotional problems. And my own story is I'd had a heart operation when I was young. They cut through the lymph, so I'd never sweated under my left arm. I'd had a trauma to the left breast. I had mastitis when I was breastfeeding. And then I went through a period of a lot of stress, a lot of hassle and stress. And you suddenly, this you're aware you've got this thing growing and getting bigger and bigger.
More stress.
Yes, absolutely. Mm. So you can see how these things build up. But also, as you know, you can reduce things and turn things around so much easier than women realise. And the other bit of advice that Phil gave me, which nobody else had given me, was that you're in no rush. For that tumour to have got to that stage, which, you know, which was probably about, it was, well, what I remember, it was about 4...
It says
3-4 inches or whatever. It was a big tumour. It takes a long time to get to that stage. So I would have been developing that, I think, really most of my life. And especially it takes about 8 years, don't they, for a tumour to get to 1 centimetre. So he said to me, you aren't in any rush. You've had that a long, long time. Right. So I kind of came back from the whole procedure. Because, of course, my family, my sister's a medical doctor, everybody wanted me to get into hospital, get the tumour removed, you know, do all the usual chemotherapy, radiotherapy. And I just couldn't see how that would help me, because I knew that I was ill already. So poisoning my system, radiating my system, to me, wasn't the answer.
Okay, well, that's important. So, obviously, you've got a great story there of success in terms of turning your situation around. And you've mentioned some important things like to do with the biopsy, that you weren't keen on that. That's something I went into recently with Dr. Downing, the whole question of biopsies. And so just in this case, I'd like to try and stick to the screening side of it, because that's what you're all about in public terms.
Can I just make a point that Rose was saying about, I think the biggest advantage that we found out, although probably we didn't realise it at the time, was that you need something that can monitor your condition.
Indeed.
Without increasing risk. That's the big factor.
Right.
You know, every time, like I say, if you go for a CT scan or for anything that has to do with ionizing radiation, you increase risk. So we were quite lucky that when I first looked at thermography, I couldn't believe it existed. It was too good to be true. But I'm one of these fellas that you've got to convince me. And when I did the research, I just couldn't believe When I spoke to somebody in the medical field, it was, there's no evidence. And yet I was unearthing mounds of evidence about the benefits of thermography.
Okay. Well, look, we're going to, at the end of the program, I just want to do a roundup on what the alternatives are to mammography, and that's clearly one of them. Okay, that's great. So
you asked there about how we got into it. Phil started researching then, and then he was looking into all these things, looking into screeners, thinking, "Oh my God, we shouldn't be doing this with women," you know. And first of all, we couldn't believe it was happening, and that we were using this tool. And that's what got Phil then was like. Every little bit of research, and he was bringing it all together, and he was like, women need to know this, right. You know, and we need to change things because this isn't working. Because 10,000 women before screening were diagnosed with breast cancer, and you know, now it's nearly 50,000 women a year. There's something not right there. Right. And that's what kind of put him on the path to start research.
Yeah. Brilliant. All right, so can we just run through some of the details? We've already mentioned some of the sort of potential negatives of mammography. We've already mentioned the fact of the radiation. Of course, there is the thing you mentioned in your own case of actual compression of the breast, what's involved in that. There's the risks of overdiagnosis and any other risks that you perceive. I just want to hear a bit more about each of them and what part they play in your overall assessment.
Well, I think one of the first things that you mentioned was about information given to women.
Yes.
Now, this information that is given to women about overdiagnosis is not overdiagnosis. It's misdiagnosis.
Okay. Yeah,
and
that's important.
And it's not overtreatment. It's mistreatment. So by just using a flip on words, you can, there is an overdiagnosis. But there isn't. There's a misdiagnosis. People are being told that they have cancer when they don't have cancer. And I think that's something. And again, doctors and oncologists are always telling us that there's this grey area where if people are diagnosed with DCIS, then we don't know which ones, if ever, are going to ever develop into cancer. So the recommendation is basically nearly always lumpectomy or mastectomy, when in fact you could use a tool like thermography to monitor the condition, to look for the runs and the information that may be there that would lead you to believe there was an active tumor, or whether that tumor was either benign or malignant. And that's just not even considered.
Right.
What we mean by DCIS, it's ductal carcinoma in situ, and this is a condition that women are being diagnosed with every day, and basically it's like calcification of the breast, you know, where things are starting to build up, and they call it a pre-cancer or zero cancer, but in fact, from all our investigations, you know, it's actually not cancer.
Not cancer.
There is no evidence out there or study out there to show that DCIS turns into cancer. And this is what Professor Michael Baum said when we interviewed him in the film, is that they've never seen ductal carcinoma in situ before. It's not a medical condition. So before screening, what used to happen, before routine screening in 1987, before that, women used to go along to the breast clinic when they had symptoms of a disease. And when they introduced routine screening, of course, they're inviting healthy women who have no symptoms along for them to have a look at the breast to see if they can find early disease. So they'd never really seen this condition. And then, of course, these women are coming along, probably not drank enough water, using antiperspirant, you know, wearing underwire bras, all the usual things. So calcification is starting to build up in the breasts. And so they gave it a name called ductal carcinoma in situ or situ. And basically, this isn't cancer. But of course, because it's got that word carcinoma in there, women are terrified. And what we found when we interviewed these doctors, many of them who wouldn't agree to be in the film in the end, is surgeons are telling women they have a 50% chance of this condition turning into cancer. And that is a complete lie. There is absolutely no research out there to back that up. So basically, these women, and there's, I mean, the government are admitting to over 4,000 women in the UK a year being diagnosed with this condition that doesn't exist. And as Professor Baum says in our film, it's not like calcification is like little dots of calcification in the breast. It's multifocal. It's not like a lump that you can just cut out. So what they're doing, they're chopping the whole breast off on women. And for something that in most cases would never, ever have harmed them in their lives.
Yeah. I've just got a piece here. You know, we're talking about the film, and Andy Evans, the consultant radiologist, said that when we're talking about ductal carcinoma in situ, ductal carcinoma in situ is not what most people would consider a cancer. I think it's much better to use a phrase such as precancerous change. But certainly explaining exactly what DCIS is difficult to most people, because when they hear the word carcinoma, they think they have a cancer. But in actual fact, it is better understood as a precancerous change.
But that also, though, Robin, that is wrong, isn't it? Because it says pre-cancer. So people
still are the word cancer in there,
aren't they? Yeah,
they haven't
and
got
what
cancer.
What they're saying is, you know, 50% of this calcification will turn into cancer. So women are like scared, you know, and they agree to go ahead and have this surgery done.
Well, look, that's a very important point, and particularly pick up on that publicity word of calling it over-treatment rather than mistreatment, which I think is quite correct. I've actually got a quote here which comes from the BMJ report recently, which is a huge study involving 90,000 women over 25 years, and it uses the word over-diagnosed, leading to unnecessary treatment. And it said that 106 out of the 44,925 healthy women in the screening group were diagnosed with and treated for breast cancer unnecessarily, which resulted in needless surgical interventions, radiotherapy, chemotherapy, or some combination. So, yeah, I mean, for those women, that's like devastating, isn't it? They've literally been treated as a person who has cancer without them actually needing it.
Absolutely. But also what it is, it's the fear that leaves that woman in.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're never the same when you've been through that. You are never the same, because you've always got that worry at the back of your head.
Yeah.
And these women probably would have lived their whole life not with no problems and died of something else in old age, you know? And also, it's a mutilation, Robin. I mean, I see these women's breasts every day. It's a mutilation that they've actually been through for absolutely nothing.
That's brutal.
And the other big thing, I know Phil's done a big report. It took him a year to compile, which we've actually passed into to the head of adult health here in Liverpool. And it's the cost to the NHS. It's over. These women have to go through about 35 different departments and procedures, which costs the NHS over £100,000 for each one.
Wow.
We've kind of done a loose a calculation on how much it would cost.
Right.
So wouldn't it be better to start a screening, starting from younger women? And with these women with ductal carcinoma in situ, why don't we just monitor them with something that doesn't increase their risk and sees early changes and see whether any of this is starting to flare up? But more importantly, why don't we get them doing some things to prevent them getting to the stage where that does develop?
Absolutely, absolutely, you know? Yes. Yeah, okay, so that's talked about one of the potential drawbacks of mammography, which is we're now calling misdiagnosis. How about the others?
Okay, well, the radiation levels that we're using, these are 29 KPV rays, aren't they,
I think what we need, needs to be explained is that the radiation itself is not ionizing, you become ionized. So everybody, when the rays hit, they ionize you, and they do that by damaging tissue.
Yeah, so maybe you want to explain a bit more actually what's going on there.
Okay, so ionization is when the photons from the rays are traveling, obviously, at massive rates, are hitting every atom in every cell and dislodging or throwing out of orbit electrons. And an atom with that an electron is called a free radical. We know that there are some free radicals, but we also know that free radicals can cause cancer. But the point is it damages the tissue. Now, if we even looked at something like BRCA1 or BRCA2, a woman with BRCA1 or BRCA2 doesn't have the repair kit to repair this damage to the DNA. So they're at much more risk. Now, when you consider that routine screening is asking or inviting healthy women to come in to the screening program and to be ionized or radiated by high levels of radiation, they're causing damage. Women should be told that there is always a risk. Nobody should be subjected to ionizing radiation. In fact, I think the law themselves or the rules for ionizing radiation is that ionizing radiation can only be used on a person where there is known to be a definite benefit at the end of it. So from in diagnostic screening, if you break your arm, then we can have a look at it. There's a benefit to that. But there can't be any real known benefit to taking a healthy woman, subjecting her to the compressions and the ionizing radiation and telling her that everything's okay at the end of it.
It's not, because everybody is damaged, basically.
Yes, it's a different set of criteria treating people who are ill in some way.
Professor Peter Gotch says that in our film, basically, that, you know, the only benefit you'll get from going for routine screening is you'll be damaged, basically. Every woman is damaged.
Well, that's not a benefit, really. Yeah. Right. But when I spoke to you at the very start, I mean, this is now more coming like us and them. I don't want that to be a us and them situation. What we're saying is that we don't want to just put out the word to abolish mammography or routine mammography. What we're saying is what we should be doing is expanding the screening program to bring in, we should be imaging women, screening women at age 20, because we're finding more and more cases of breast cancer in women in the 30s. If we're finding it at 30, that's been developing since they were 20. Mm. And we need to use more update and safer equipment that doesn't irradiate people.
Right. So, yeah, okay, can we come back to that then? Because that's absolutely right. Yeah. Of course, yeah. You know, screening program as a concept, of course, is a great idea. So, yes, I appreciate that you're not trying to sort of say screening is bad, full stop. We're just trying to reevaluate benefits and drawbacks.
Leave mammography for diagnostic if there's a problem. Leave it for that. Because if somebody decides they want to have a lump removed or whatever, that X-ray will show you exactly where that lump is. Hmm. Okay, I'm not an advocate of mammography, but it's the routine screening of healthy women who don't know they're being damaged that we're trying to change to use equipment that isn't going to harm them in any way and gives them a predictive feature so we can see things earlier than waiting till you've got a problem.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, while it's on my mind, just as a quick one, Rob, is the ideal situation would be to use both a test of anatomy and a test of physiology. I mean, really, we can't compare thermography with mammography because they're two completely different tests. But if we could get into a situation where I think we would all agree that prevention is much better than going for radical treatments. So if we could get women at age 20. Now, if through a physiological look at the health of the breasts, we were able to see a problem and thermography can pick up non palpable lesions.
Just to explain those words, because not everybody will understand them.
Women can present for screening with no symptoms whatsoever. They haven't found a lump or anything. But the physiological changes that are in the process of making that tumour can already be happening.
Understood.
But are not able to be picked up by an anatomical test such as mammography or X-ray. So when these women present at, if we could use something that was non-invasive and a predictor and say, look, there is something going on in that breast. We don't know what it is. If we wanted to find out whether there was a lump, we could then refer on to something like ultrasound, rather than going straight into the risk factor. And then we cover both bases. We have a physiological test and an anatomical test. And so we have the picture, much more information than just doing either one. But the whole basis of this should be without increasing risk.
Risk, okay, important. All right, so I'm still sticking to the risk factors in mammography, though, because I want to cover the territory so it's quite clear what we're dealing with here. So the pressure, this is something you made a decision against it on those grounds. Why?
Basically, because they're allowed to use up to 300 newtons on a woman's breast, which equates to about 67 pounds worth of weight. You saw a report, didn't you, that it takes about 20 pounds and that could burst the tumour.
Okay.
Disseminates cells anyway. So I didn't choose to have a mammogram. That was one of the big reasons why I didn't, because all a mammogram would have shown me is that I had a lump. It wouldn't have told me anything about the status of that lump, okay? But to actually get that, I would, and because it was in my chest, and actually I could see it anyway, I didn't think the risk of actually having it squashed and disseminating cells from it would be actually a good idea. So I chose not to. Now, I work with women with breast problems, as you know, every day, and I've had one woman who's had a burst nipple from the pressure of a mammogram. I've had lots of women that fainted. I saw a lady in Chippenham only a few weeks ago that had actually fainted. Her breast, she'd come out of the machine, hit her head, knocked herself out, and has been left now deaf in one ear.
Wow.
So it's not a good idea to squash a breast down. It's very delicate. And I now remember reading Suzanne Summers' book, Knockout, Doctors Who Are Curing Cancer. And Dr. Russell Blaylock says that, you know, when you go to med school, you're taught to be very, very gentle. My sister, who's a doctor, said this. She talked to me very gentle with breast tissue. And, you know, if there is a lump there, you only feel very gently around it and you don't press it, because even the fact of pressing it can disseminate cells from the tube, especially if it's active. So, and then we're there, like, ramming it, you know, between these two plates and squashing it right down. And it can't be good for you. I mean, I can't see any man having his privates squashed between two plates and radiated in the name of health. It wouldn't happen. So why is it still happening to women?
Okay, so it's a similar reservation you had to about a biopsy, basically, that it actually could make things worse.
Yeah. Absolutely, makes things worse.
Yeah. Is there anything else we haven't covered in the way of reservations about mammography?
My biggest thing about is, as we said, is that women have never ever been told the truth about mammography. As you probably know, the papers are renowned for writing things about, the last one was that bogus heat scans, and I think it was a Dr. Wollaston who comes out with claims, one, that alternative clinics are telling women that non-radiation procedures are safer than radiation procedures. Well, of course we are.
I think that's a no-brainer.
It's true. And the other thing is that she says that mammography saves 1,300 lives, and that there is the evidence from that in the Marmon report. And actually what it says in the Marmon report is this: since the estimates are provided from studies with many limitations and whose relevance to present-day screening programs can be questioned, they have substantial uncertainty and should be regarded only as an approximate guide.
Right.
It doesn't say
saves
1,300 lives. And what it does say in the same report is that over 4,000 women are diagnosed with a cancer they don't have. Mm. So where is the benefit? And the point I'm trying to make there is that why is it so important to maintain a procedure that we know is causing damage? And why aren't we being truthful with these women and saying, listen, there are other procedures out there. Have a look. Here's the information. This is what you're supposed to do. Informed consent, ethical and legal informed consent. You have to tell these women about all of the risks, all of the benefits and the alternatives.
Probably what will sum this up is when we first got our first thermography camera in 2008, a local surgeon rang us and said, I don't like your leaflets. And Phil said to him, he was on loudspeaker on the phone, and Phil said, we don't like yours either. You're lying to women. And that was in 2008. And the NHS have had to change their breast screening.
They have.
Three times since then. Hmm. We haven't had to change ours. Okay. Right. Now, what he said to us is, we don't like your camera because it picks things up too early and there's nothing we can do. If we can't cut a tumour out, if we can't give chemotherapy or radiotherapy, then all your camera is going to do is give us a lot of hysterical women with inflammation in their breasts. So Phil turned around to him and said, well, I'll tell you what, you give us and send us those hysterical women with inflammation in the breast and we will show them what to do so that it doesn't develop into cancer. And of course, he put the phone down on us at that point. And there's been ongoing stuff with that surgeon ever since because he doesn't like what we're doing. All we're trying to do, Robin, is prevent women getting to the stage where they've got cancer. Yeah. The cancer cell doubling time in younger women is faster than in older women. Younger women are getting more cancer because we're living in Wi-Fi, there's a lot more radiation around, and, you know, we've got contraceptive pills, underwire bras, a lot of stress, people are dehydrated, acidic, you know, and of course we're seeing more and more breast cancer. But if we screened girls with something like thermography that picks things up early, at 20, come back in 3 months, let's do you again, and let's get the thumbprint of your breast now. And that thumbprint will only change if disease starts to build up or if that girl gets pregnant, and then you'd have to reassess it and get a new baseline. But apart from that, that shouldn't change. And then it's very easy, if they have regular non-invasive screening, to pick up changes in the breast rather than waiting 8 years down the line and having a tumour.
Well, it might not be.
Yeah, and that way we can prevent breast cancer. You could eradicate. I had this conversation with Dr. Sarah Myhill, and you know, you could actually eradicate breast cancer over the next two generations if you had proper routine screening that didn't harm women, that gave them the opportunity of preventing getting to that stage.
Well, that of course was what was heralded of the mammography program. That's what it was going to do, but
that's right, but it's
clearly
right.
Has failed on every count. The statistics show otherwise. Okay, well look, earlier this year there was a pretty large piece of news came out that Switzerland has actually done an assessment of mammography. An expert panel looked into it and came out with some pretty damning conclusions about it, and has recommended changes in Switzerland that are far-reaching concerning the existing program and any future ones. Now, Phil, you mentioned earlier you find that that's a little bit more radical than you'd like to see in some ways, because, you, of course, mammography has its place. Maybe we could just say a little bit more about what that place is, in your, just in your opinion, and also about the effect of that piece of news within the UK. I'd like to hear whether you think that's an important factor for what's happening now, what will happen in the UK.
I think obviously it's an important factor when we consider that the people, the Swiss cantons, looked at the same information as the people in Britain looked at in the Parliament report, and come up with a completely different view. I mean, they looked at things and they actually said that they could find no benefit from routine screening with mammography, and therefore that they were saying that we should abolish, or we should start winding up this screening procedure. Now, in England, we, and we've met with the some people from the screening lobby who look at the same information and come up with a completely different picture, that, again, when they use the figures of 1,300 lives are saved and we think it's beneficial, they come up with a different picture. They can't go on doing this. It is literally exploding in their face. I mean, we have all the time is that we have, well, if we're using something different, or we suggest that something safer is put in its place, we're told that there is no evidence of thermography that it has any benefits. But again, all you have to do, I'll just read one to you now. Mm-hmm. And it says, the basic neural network framework has been established and has great potential for the future development of intelligent breast cancer diagnostic system. This would be especially useful to teenagers and young adults who are unsuitable for mammography at a young age. An intelligent breast thermography neural network will be able to give an accurate diagnosis of breast cancer and can make a positive impact on breast disease detection. That's published in Medline. So what we're saying is we're looking at two bases here. We're looking at a procedure, mammography, routine mammography, that countries all around the world, doctors all around the world, people here, because don't forget, one of the things that we haven't mentioned is that we screen GPs, we screen radiologists, we screen nurses, we screen people who work in breast cancer hospitals who won't go near mammography. They come to us because they know it's unsafe. All we're asking for is that somewhere across the line, somebody, they are honest and say, right, look, these are the dangers or the risks that will be involved with routine mammography. And as the Swiss have done, be brave enough to turn around and say, you know, we made a mistake, but we can't go on justifying this mistake and every year telling nearly 5,000 women they have a cancer that they don't have, but also increasing the risk of every woman that presents for mammography. There are safer ways out there.
Phil said as well, you know, we have had a meeting with the screening lobby here in Liverpool, I think what came over to us from that meeting is that they are terrified of being sued for the last 30 years. And I think what's going to happen is we're going to look back on these last 30 years and think, oh my God, did we really do that to our women in the future? You know, when these mammogram machines are in museums and looking what women's gone through.
When?
But what we were trying to say to them in the meeting is that it's very difficult to pull, because they've indoctrinated so many women in all these lies about routine screening and its benefits. If they pull the rug now, that everybody's going to be up in arms. So And also people will start looking back and thinking, oh my God, my wife died with that. She didn't need to die with that. She never had cancer and she got treated, and things like that are all going to get thrown up. So what we were trying to say in this meeting is that, so if you say, look, well, hold your hands up and say, look, it's not right. We're not using the right tools, but we've learned from that, and let's move on in a positive way. And let's introduce things for women so that we can screen them earlier and find things earlier and do it as a proper routine preventative screening program. I think they would have less women looking to sue.
Of course.
Than if they just pull it.
I think it's an ideal opportunity with the technology that's around now, because I think the last trial, or major trial, on mammography was in the 80s. A long time ago. It has no relevance to where we are with breast disease and monitoring for breast disease now. There is an opportunity right now that we should be grasping by both hands, because all we're being told is that we're winning the war against breast cancer. We're doing this against breast cancer, but at the same, within the same breath, we expect increases in breast cancer. It's increased to 1 in 3 women now.
Yeah, it's massive. Okay, yeah. So look, we're heading towards the end of the program. Can we sort of do a roundup now and just saying, well, look, what are the options available? This is apart from, you know, good old sensible prevention, which, you know, taking steps with lifestyle to make sure that the likelihood of getting breast cancer in the first place is reduced. When it comes to actually screening and monitoring, what are the options and what place do each of them have? How does it all fit together, do you think, in your estimation?
Well, first of all, I would say the first port of call should be thermography. Picking up the early changes, and it gives you a picture of the breast, and it's safe for every woman, and there's no compression, there's no radiation. And it's safe for everybody. I mean, I screen babies. You can screen with thermography any age group. And there's no problem with breast density. There's no problem with women with implants. And I do a lot of like disabled women as well where mammography is too traumatic for them.
Yes.
So first port of call, if we used thermography routinely, if we find anything, then the next port of call, I think, would be an ultrasound.
Okay.
Because that's going to give you an anatomical view.
We're not saying that we should use any standalone procedure. We're not saying that as Rosa said, that if we used physiology always happens before anatomy. So if we used a test of physiology to see the earliest stages and found something, then we could always bring in a safe anatomical test. And it's all about, at that stage, safety. And then, if need be, and also what we haven't mentioned is a woman's choice. If a woman wants to have mammography, well, that's good, but just amongst all the risks and the benefits.
Okay.
So the thing is, we're not saying that thermography is a standalone test by any means. What we're saying is we should have both a test of anatomy and physiology.
Okay, so, but you are supporting the idea of using ultrasound, though, as an in-between stage, if you like, which is actually looking at the anatomy, but it's non-invasive, non-harmful.
Yeah, but it's
sound waves, it's not radiation.
And the beauty of that is because, I mean, when the doctors go to med school, they're taught anatomy and physiology. They're not just taught physiology, or they're not just taught anatomy, because both biological systems interact with each other. Mm. So if we have a picture of what's going on on a physiological test and also an anatomical test, we have more information. Right. That takes out the grey area. That takes out this area of, oh, look, there is a lump. We don't know what the status of that lump is. Well, we can now have a very good chance. Nothing is 100% perfect, but we have a very good chance of being able to tell somebody whether it's benign or whether it is malignant. If it's benign, then the obvious port of call should be monitoring the situation safely.
Yeah, and not pushing women into all this invasive treatment. So mammography, where mammography, I think, may have a place is for diagnostics. So if somebody's got a problem and that's already been found, but it shouldn't be anywhere near the routine breast screening. It shouldn't be anywhere near routine breast screening. That's on healthy women. But it's there in hospitals if a woman chooses to, that the risk, you know, is worth taking to see where that tumour is exactly, especially if they're going to have surgery or anything like that.
Yes,
so that's where mammography should be, and it shouldn't be anywhere near the routine breast screening.
So, so really, I mean, I hope this hasn't turned into a rant, but I think, as we've said, the whole point about this is that there is a fantastic opportunity out there to take the blinkers off, to benefit millions and millions of women who have no protection under the routine screening program at the moment. Bring them into it. Bring them in. The younger we bring them in, the earlier we can diagnose something. We can diagnose something we don't know what it is at this stage. It doesn't have to be cancer, but if we see that there is an abnormality in that breast, we can do things there and then before that develops into a problem, which can be then found by an anatomical test. And the other thing is I think that the benefit is that anatomical tests can only tell you when you've got it. What we need is something that works before.
Can I just mention as well, because I know Dr. Russell Blaylock as well, a lot of his people, he sends for MRIs before a mammogram. So he does thermography, ultrasound, MRI, because, of course, it's magnetic resonance. It's not radiation. Oh, there is harms with it still, but it's not radiation. And you can do that without a contrast, without a radioactive dye.
It always boils down to, Robin, first do no harm.
Line. On that note, I'm going to have to wrap us up. We're out of time. Really interesting, and I knew there was going to be far too much to talk about in this program. But anyway, thank you both so much for coming on the show today and sharing some of your insights you've gained into this kind of minefield subject. And I personally wish you the best of luck with your campaign to bring about change.
Thank you.
Thanks, Robin.
Having listened to all that, I'm sure you won't want to miss the opportunity of seeing Phil and Rosa's film, The Promise. Full details of The Promise and, of course, of anything else mentioned in the show will be on the Yes to Life website. Just go to yestolife.org.uk, that's yestolife.org.uk, and click the link to radio in the left-hand sidebar. Do make a point in looking at our section in the Health Triangle magazine here on UK Health Radio. Next week, I'm going to be speaking to one of the driving forces behind integrative medicine for cancer in the UK, Patricia Peat. She's the founder of Cancer Options, a service she's been running for over 15 years, and she has some fascinating insights into the whole development of integrative medicine for cancer. That's all for this week. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you'll join me again next week. Goodbye.